There's crispy. And then there's crispy-er. Try our new and improved Tyson Crispy Chicken Strips. Crispy just got crispy-er.
Like, for instance, Odell Beckham, twice a week or twice a year, you're going to have to figure out what to do with him, right?
You know.
All right, then, that's one way ahead on NFL Live. Jeremy Fowler sits down with Steelers head coach Mike Tomlin. It is a candid conversation that puts last season to bed and looks ahead to what's next. And speaking of what's next, our Field Yates and Lewis Riddick look to the future and projected power rankings for all 32 teams over the course of the next 3 years. And you don't want to miss Keyshawn, who ranks his top five wide receivers in the league right now. Who have changed teams? Did Odell Beckham Jr. make the top of his list? He's a one-name wonder now. He's just Key.
Just Key. At least you got that memo.
Key and not Keyshawn?
No, I'm teasing you.
Yeah, all right. Keyshawn back with us. Lewis Riddick is here. Field Yates, I'm Wendy Nix, and we're glad to have you over the course of the next 90 minutes. If you weren't with us yesterday, it did mark the deadline for teams to reach agreement on any long-term deal with players they had chosen to franchise. Well, the deadline came and went, and as we expected, there was no deal for Jadeveon Clowney. In fact, the Texans linebacker did not agree to a long-term deal. Instead, they say there's no trade expected either. He will now, in all likelihood, not sign the tender anytime soon and miss most, if not all, of training camp. When he does sign it, assuming he does, it's worth almost $16 million for the 2019 season. And, Lewis, you have to be careful here because it's not a holdout because he has no contract. He hasn't signed the tender, so we won't call it a holdout, but he will miss, if you will, likely anyway, miss training camp. Veterans report they have a team, you know, they'd like to have him there. Does it become a distraction at all?
No, interestingly enough, you know, whenever we use the word distraction, and I know it's part of the vernacular when we're talking about guys who aren't in training camp, who aren't with the football team, you know, players don't necessarily sit around and go, man, I wonder what Jadeveon's doing. Man, I really can't study my playbook right now or hit these weights because he's not here right now because he hasn't signed. No, really, the guy who actually is backing him up goes, yeah, now it's my turn. Yeah, I'll play. I'll play. It only becomes a distraction. It becomes more of a nuisance when people ask you about it because players really don't have any insight as to how that's going. It's not like they're running upstairs talking to the front office people and saying, hey, how are the negotiations going? Is Jadeveon going to be here tomorrow? Is he going to be here the next day? It's more of an inconvenience and a nuisance for the guys. Once they get on the field, honestly, I'm telling you, you strap your helmet on, Jadeveon is the furthest thing from their mind.
It makes sense.
Until he gets there. So it's more of a distraction, and it's a nuisance, and it's something that you talk about in the front office, though, when you're up there in those offices, especially if you are underperforming on that side of the ball at that position where that he plays. Then all of a sudden, things get a little tense.
Well, then you're on the hot seat a little
bit, right.
And then it's highlighted. But, I mean, it's anybody asked about something they have no control over, it's frustrating, and then that's what we do because you're there, so we're going to ask you. But
sure.
Fair enough. Unlike Jadeveon Clowney, the Falcons and defensive tackle Grady Jarrett did reach agreement, a 4-year, $68 million extension before Monday's deadline. Jaron had a career-high 6 sacks in 2018 to go with 52 combined tackles and 3 forced fumbles. At the start of the day on Monday, it was understood that these two sides were talking field. We weren't sure if it would be finalized before the deadline. In fact, it was. But in the case of the Falcons, there's a lot of hands, there's a lot of mouths to feed, if you will. Deion Jones is on that list. Julio Jones would like a new deal. What does this mean for those guys?
Well, first of all, they get about a day of celebration to have a player of Grady Jarrett, a homegrown talent, fifth-round pick, around for 4 more seasons at least. But Deion Jones and Julio Jones are now at the foreground for these contract negotiations. Julio Jones has been a year-plus negotiation, and Arthur Blank, the owner, has inserted himself into it and has assured Julio Jones his deal would get done. If it doesn't get done, you better watch out for some revolt. It will probably almost assuredly get done. Deion Jones is the tricky one, though. This is a guy who is now eligible for an extension, enters the final year of his rookie contract, has been perhaps the best coverage linebacker in the NFL over the past 3 seasons. If he does not get a new deal done in short order, keep an eye on him. The training camp is right around the corner. Keep an eye on him not showing up to training camp And that would incur fines, and it, for him, it would be playing the long game. But this is a player who believes he deserves a new deal, and the Falcons have been aggressive in locking up players they view as part of their core.
That's exactly what I was going to say. History shows that the Atlanta Falcons love to take care of their own.
Yeah,
Julio Jones situation, I'm not worried about that because they have a relationship there with the owner, and it's a conversation that goes on where they say, hey, you come in, you do your job, we're going to take care of you, don't worry about it. You remember a year or so ago, they took care of him with incentives, but he got his money. This time around, he'll wait for Michael Thomas to get the money from the New Orleans Saints. He'll piggyback off that because he wants to be the top paid wide receiver. And they know that. They need him to win football games. They can't win in the passing game without him. And in terms of Jones, the other guy on the defensive side of the ball, who knows what they're going to do there? It's a defensive-minded head coach. They just paid the defensive tackle. I'm sure they're saying to themselves, Lewis, we got to take care of him as well.
Yeah, and if you, and this is what's tricky about this negotiation right here. Deion Jones, C.J. Mosley, which one would you rather have?
Yeah.
Most people would pick Deion Jones.
Deion Jones, yep.
Well, C.J. Mosley just signed a ridiculous contract with the Jets, $17 million a year. $17 million a year for an inside
That's
linebacker.
A whole lot of money.
$17 million a year. $40 million plus guaranteed at signing. Deion Jones is going, I'm not taking a penny less than that because I'm better than that guy.
Yeah.
And most people would say he is. So if you're the Falcons now, how do you deal with this one? Because now that, I mean, the whole inside linebacker market in particular is blown all out of whack because of that contract. And, you know, they're probably, Arthur Blank's probably looking at the Jets and the Johnson family going, thanks.
Come on, man. That's what he said.
Yeah. $17 million is a full $4.5 million more than what guys like Luke Kuechly and Bobby Wagner been there, done that.
But you know what? And if I'm Deion Jones, I'm saying you better get close.
Right.
You better get close.
You may not get there, but you
That's
better.
Right. I didn't do it. It's not my fault.
And the Falcons are aggressive, as we just mentioned. They want to get something done. Drew Rosenhaus, the agent for Deion Jones, is himself aggressive. He likes to do these early extensions for players to get these guys who are not first-round picks. They don't already have $15, $20 million in the bank. He wants them to get secured, and this is one that is worth keeping eyes on over the next 10 days or so before training camp.
Well, since we're talking contracts, nobody gets more attention when we talk contracts than do quarterbacks. That's just kind of how it works. So there are a number of quarterbacks looking for new deals. Tom Brady, believe it or not, in the last year of his contract with the Patriots, he's on the list. The six-time Super Bowl champion turns 42 in August, but has not missed a step. Phillip Rivers still looking for that elusive first Super Bowl appearance with the Chargers. Hasn't allowed, as his touchdown rate last year was the highest since 2008. I should say he hasn't slowed down either. Bucs quarterback Jameis Winston playing on his fifth-year option. He only has one winning season in his career so far. Obviously, he has a new head coach brought there to try to turn this around. The player drafted right after him in a similar situation, really, Marcus Mariota, hoping to get the Titans over the 9-7 bump and earn a new contract at the same time. Also on this list, Dak Prescott about to get a lot more expensive in Dallas, as he should. He was a fourth-round pick, so no fifth-year option here. He's made roughly $2 million in his career as he, too, enters the final year of this deal. Wow.
That's a lot of information right there.
That is a lot of information.
You powered through it, though.
I know. I just kind of got to know.
Yeah, you did.
Let's start with Dak. I'll say this, because we talked about Arthur Blank and sort of giving his word. Jerry Jones, too, when he makes his mind up about something, sort of sticks to it. He has given no indication whatsoever that Dak isn't his guy and that he won't be willing to pay within reason. Within reason, though. That's the rub, I guess. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and the Cowboys are probably sitting there saying to them, at one point, Stephen Jones said, hey, we have a lot of guys we got to pay. And the reality is the way they all stay and that we keep this thing going is if everybody takes slightly less than the largest piece of pie that they could use or they could make or earn if they used all their leverage. So for Dak Prescott, it's, are you willing to potentially take a discount? It's something maybe in the $30 million per year range. Or do you want to be paid at the very top of the quarterback market, which is probably achievable if you take this thing all the way through the season, the threat of the franchise tag looms, and you command something closer to $33, $34 million. I think if I'm Dak Prescott, given that the perks of being the Cowboys quarterback includes things beyond the field, on-field stuff. He's a face, an invisible face. He's probably pretty financially secure. He might be willing to roll the dice. But maybe he says, you know something, let's put this to bed. And $30-ish million per year is a more sensible number for
him. Poor guy.
It all boils down, for me, what's the real money? We can make it look like whatever we want to. The Dallas Cowboys and Jerry Jones, they like to give out real money, though.
Yep.
They don't. The inflated contract, the back-end numbers, You say 30, what's the real number? Is it 3-year, 90, fully guaranteed? That's real money. If you give me a deal that averages $37 million a year, but I'm never going to touch $37 million a year, doesn't matter. I think that's where Dak is at with the contract. Yeah, they can give him $30 million, but what's the real money? And the Dallas Cowboys historically have done with their players, they've given players real money.
Sure. And it's not, they don't have a cash issue. They don't have a cash flow issue. They'll be able to pay their guys. I mean, what it is, though, from an accounting standpoint, how are we able to then manage the salary cap going forward? Because I will say this, when you were talking about Dak Prescott, is he willing to take a little bit of a discount from 32 to 30
spread
million?
Spread it around.
He has already indicated, you know, he's kind of, I don't know if it was tongue in cheek or he was dead serious, where he said, look, I think I should be paid in, you know, at or near the top of the market. Yep. Amari should be paid at or near the top of the market. Zeke should be paid at or near the top of the market. We all should be trying to be at the top of the market. So it doesn't sound like he has up the mindset of, hey, I'm really looking out for the rest of the 52 guys on this roster. It's we're out here to get ours. And I think part of that, I'm telling you, part of this has to do with we all watch the news. We are watching what's going on in the NBA. And although it doesn't translate one-to-one to the NFL game, and everybody knows that, guys are still thinking, I play
it doesn't
sport.
Matter. It's a sport.
Exactly. I'm saying guys are still thinking, I play a sport where the longevity isn't near like it is in the NBA. No, forget that. I'm getting my money.
I think, too, he's a fourth-round pick. He wasn't a first-rounder. He hasn't had all those accolades and stuff. And there's got to be a little bit of a chip on his shoulder to say, I want to prove that I earned myself.
And it's really not even a chip. It's like, look, I deserve it.
Well, fair.
No, I know he does deserve it, but does he deserve to be in that 30-over-plus-million-dollar market?
That's a different
market.
Or is it at 30 with real money, because there's other players on the team that are coming up like Amari Cooper, like Zeke Elliott, that you got to think about if you're the Dallas Cowboys. You got to think, what are you going to do in terms of Zeke? Are you going to protect yourself as an organization? Are you going to put something in that contract because he's had some off-the-field issues that probably are concerning Jerry and the rest of the family, that they got to say, okay, we're going to take a look at this contract, but here's what we need you to sign. We need you to sign this to protect us.
And there's no question that you know Dallas. Right now, they're pumping the brakes, too. Otherwise, this would be done.
Well, yeah. I
they could
that's
really
true.
Establish a fair market value between his agent and them. This would have been done.
If it had been easy, it would have been done. There's no question. Every time we get to the Cowboys, we kind of come to a screeching halt. We can't even get to Mariota and Jameis Winston. But you know what? They need to have big years. We'll just sum it
don't
up like
in,
that.
Don't throw so many interceptions.
End of discussion. We move on. Now on ESPN.com, the annual NFL Future Power Rankings. And this is where we have a panel of experts. And they look at teams sort of projecting, in this case, 3 seasons out, and talk about rank them in terms of which teams are in the best shape. That means they'll look at quarterback situation, overall roster, draft, front office, and coaching staff. So a lot of different factors. Field and Lewis both on that. Can I call it committee?
Panel
committee.
I'm good with that.
They were part of this process, and so that's good for us because we can talk about it. What I find interesting is the team at the top. Mm-hmm. Obviously there's Andrew Luck, but he put so many questions to bed, I think, about his health. They were 22 this time last year, and correct me if I'm wrong, you got to assume that was because we didn't know
the status of his
right arm.
It's a huge part of it, and he answered those questions. And you know what? I mean, for me, I'll just say this quickly. Last year, looking at the thing that I was concerned about with Indianapolis was whether or not some of the young players that Chris Ballard, the GM, had drafted were going to come through. Or was he going to hit on them? Well, he slam dunked them. I mean, Quentin Nelson became a beast. You know, those guys, I mean, those are the kind of things, those kind of players. Darius Leonard became a beast. So now you have faith in the fact that looking 3 years out, those guys are just going to get better.
They've got a quarterback. They've got excellent draft capital going forward. They've got an incredibly well-managed cap situation. No onerous contracts on the book. They have a head coach and a GM in unison. They've got ascending young talent on both sides of the ball. They've got outstanding coordinators. This roster is not without holes. But there is no part of this franchise that you look at right now and you say, you know something? That has the ability to dramatically hold them back over the next 3 years. Every hole that they have on their roster, they have the means to fill that, whether it's a future draft, whether it's trading for a player, whether it's signing a player or developing them. Think about a guy like Kenny Moore, cut multiple times before he lands on his feet in Indianapolis. Now he's one of the highest paid slot corners in football.
Talk about a good position to be in. Think about that. Not that they will correctly fill every hole, but to be in a position to be able to have the capital, the dollars, the resources, and the intellectual capital to do that is huge.
Yeah.
So we have the Patriots at 2. What I think is not curious, but interesting about this is that we're talking about 3 years out, and we got a 42-year-old quarterback, albeit one who has not really slowed down much at all.
Yeah.
But they'll have to plan at some point.
Yeah, at some point. And, you know, and hopefully Jarrett Stidham is that guy. Hopefully Josh McDaniels can develop him slowly behind the scenes to where he can take the reins and continue to run with it. Look, Bill is the master. He gets it better than anyone. The only question I have about New England going forward, and look, let me just accentuate the positive, though. Their draft this year, on paper, was fantastic. It's a slam dunk. It's an A+. And so he has a lot of young players coming along that are going to wind up being able to carry the mantle and continue this tradition. The only question I have is this. There is so much brain drain that this team undergoes every year in terms
because
of good coaches leaving.
Yeah.
Look, Brian Flores, you just don't replace him. Brendan Daly down in Kansas City, who's their new defensive line coach who was in New England, they love this guy in Kansas City. They think he should be a coordinator within a very short amount of time and will be a head coach in a short amount of time as well. So when Bill loses those kind of guys, look, he can't coach every position. Although sometimes you think he could.
Although if there was anyone
at the same time. But that's the only thing that concerns me about them is, look, we are seeing an unprecedented intellectual football mind really just put on, like, really construct a masterpiece in his entire career.
Yeah.
How long can he keep that up?
All right, the Rams are at 8, and that doesn't seem problematic until you say, well, hey, this is the reigning NFC champions. They, too, have a quarterback. They have a younger head coach, but one that's proven to have some acumen as well. Is that too low?
You know, I don't think so, Wendy, and here's the reason why. Again, this is a projection for the next 3 seasons. The Rams are not cap-strapped by any stretch, but as we did see this offseason, they're going to have to make some difficult decisions on players that have been vital cogs from them on a run that included that to the Super Bowl. Plus, the uncertainty surrounding Todd Gurley, the most prolific touchdown maker in the NFL over the past 2 seasons, is now answering questions about his knee every other day, it feels like. They have the head coach. Their quarterback, Jared Goff, is certainly trending in the right direction. But ultimately, when you've got so much talent, as we've seen around the NFL, whether it's Seattle, whether it's New England, almost every year, you're going to have to say goodbye to talented players. And we have yet to see the Rams replenish the depth during this quote-unquote mini era of Sean McVay.
Well, because we don't know, right?
Right,
we haven't gotten to that point. Sample size is smaller, but that's a valid point.
Mm-hmm. No, there's no doubt about it.
You know, we talked about these guys earlier. Again, what a difference a year makes with the Cleveland Browns. They have a young quarterback.
Yeah.
They've got a talented roster. They also have, and he may be the perfect guy, but they also have a first-year head coach who will be charged with putting this group of talented players together and making them a team.
Look, on the football field, it's offensive line. But as far as who is going to keep this entire collection of players, combustible players, young players, hungry players, attention-starved players, want-to-be-the-guy players, all rowing in the same directions, that's Freddie Kitchens. It will hinge on him. John Dorsey has gotten a lot of talent and given it to him, and he has said, Freddie, make a team out of this.
Yeah.
Which we all know, talent collection is not the same as team building. Everyone knows that in the scouting world. John Dorsey knows that. Freddie Kitchens is the one who's going, thanks. Thanks for all these toys. Now let's see if you can get the job done. And that really... Hey, there's some people who would maybe even put Cleveland on paper even higher than that, I'm sure. But you have to kind of push pause a little bit until you see what Freddie can really do. And quite honestly, some of the teams right behind them, look, the Chicago Bears, if Mitch Trubisky hits, if in his second year he can do the same things in that system that Pat Mahomes did in the second year in the system in Kansas City, look out for the Monsters of the Midwest.
Look, I feel like at 9, it's fair. It means there's hope. There's a lot of pieces in place. Any higher than that, in my opinion, means we might be drinking the Kool-Aid just a tad too soon.
Kool-Aid.
The Steelers have their sights set on a return to the postseason, but they'll have to do it, of course, without Antonio Brown or Le'Veon Bell. The two combined for over half of Pittsburgh's scrimmage yards during the 5 seasons they played together. That was easily the most of any duo in the league from 2013 to 2017. The 2018 NFL season, likely one the Steelers would prefer to forget. The team missed the playoffs for the first time since 2013, and they saw two of those big stars leave the franchise. Jeremy Fowler sat down with Steelers head coach Mike Tomlin to talk about how the team will look to move past all that drama from last year.
Le'Veon Bell failed to report by today's deadline.
Le'Veon Bell has taken his talent to the Big Apple.
Antonio Brown did not show up on Saturday. On Sunday, he was promptly deactivated.
Breaking news, Antonio Brown is a Raider.
You dealt with two very public storylines with Le'Veon Bell's holdout, Antonio Brown's departure. What do you sort of learn about managing people and players when you go through things like that?
I don't know that I learned anything new. I just know that it's always a challenge.
There's been a cleansing, if you will. When you're trying to compete at the level that we're trying to compete at and be world champs, I think that guys that really have a strong desire to be a part of it and put their hand in the pile is a significant element of that.
What did you mean by that?
I just meant what I said. I think that particularly in this business is something that is very voluntary in terms of mentality. And part of it is a desire to be a part of something bigger than yourself and to put selfish ambitions aside. It was no slight against those guys, but all journeys come to an end, and their journey in Pittsburgh did, and I wish them the best moving forward. I know they're not looking back, and neither are we.
There's so much motivation for everyone, you know. There's really no drama in our locker room.
You expect a calmer locker room this year, maybe? A little more, less drama?
I don't know that there was a lack of calm a year ago, to be quite frank, within our group. The circus that maybe surrounds our group can be described as that. But the group itself, these guys are professional.
And wants to air it out.
Touchdown, Pittsburgh!
The way that he plays, the way that he leads this football team, this guy is all that you want in a quarterback.
What more would you like to see from him this year?
Whatever the group needs. And I evaluate him and challenge him in the same ways that I evaluate and challenge myself. When it gets thick and the dominoes start falling, I'll be able to eloquently express what I need from him. You know, we got a good nucleus. We got good young talent. The guys are working hard. They're right-minded. But the journey is the journey. The journey will define itself. And I'm looking forward to getting on this journey with this group of men.
Please welcome Ryan Shazier.
How's Ryan Shazier doing?
Ryan's doing great, man. We've enjoyed his wedding, and that's a surreal moment, to be quite honest with you. To be in Cincinnati, Ohio in that December a couple of years ago and to watch him walk down that aisle at his wedding, it's just an awesome thing to witness and be a part of. He gets a lot of credit for his will and his fight and his talents, and rightfully so.
At the end of this odd 9-6-1 season, still really hard for me to process that Pittsburgh's not going to be in the playoffs.
What about the mindset after missing the playoffs for the first time in a while?
I'd be kidding you if I told you I had a certain edge because of what happened in 2018. I just have a certain edge because I better have a certain edge.
What is the edge? How would you describe it?
You know how it is. Ready for battle.
Mike Tomlin was able to take time and sit down with Jeremy while also hosting a casino night for his hometown charity, the Hampton Roads Youth Foundation. On Friday, Coach Tomlin, a Peninsula native and William & Mary grad, has been returning for that event for over a decade. And Jeremy Fowler has returned here to Bristol to be with us for a debrief, if you will. Yep. Let's just start with this. What's your key takeaway? I'm sure there were parts we didn't see, and you had a chance to talk with Coach Tomlin before and after. What's the number one thing you learned?
Sure. That Mike Tomlin is betting on himself in a crucial year, Wendy. Tomlin told me directly, I shaped my reputation in this business by being singularly focused on the task at hand. So, of course, he's not worried about 2018. He's not worried about the perception that he's too friendly with players or whatever. He's relying on what he's done, his pedigree as a winner, and he expects his team to follow accordingly.
So he also defended his locker room in those comments we heard. What's the reaction, you think, from his players, who I know you also know well?
Relief. I mean, this is exactly what they want to hear. I've spoken to dozens of players about this, and they all say, hey, we have a locker room of football-first guys, true professionals. We just had two players who happened to be wanted out of Pittsburgh for business decisions. That shouldn't affect us. Now, it is a very outspoken group to the media. They speak freely, but they don't think they should be punished for that. Tomlin understands that, so he might as well be speaking directly to his guys there.
Yeah, I think you could kind of get the sense that last year, as this stuff started to play out, as Le'Veon Bell was, you know, you knew that he wasn't going to be on the roster. As you knew that things were progressing, that Antonio Brown was likely going to go ahead and orchestrate his ouster from Pittsburgh, the rest of the team was like, that's them.
Right.
That's not a reflection on how the rest of us get along with one another or any other players. And that seems to be consistent with what Mike continues to say, which, I mean, all the quotes that are coming out of this, you know, singularly focused on the task at hand. I mean, that is just typical Mike Tomlin. You can just hear him saying it. I believe him. I believe that that is how this team is kind of looking at 2019. And I expect them, you know, I don't know, you know, I do believe in addition by subtraction. Those are great players. Antonio Brown's a great player. Le'Veon Bell's a great player. But what this team has shown you is it is a replacement business through and through. And that's what their job is.
That piece right there sounds like Tony Dungy to me. It sounds a lot like Tony that we're going to move on. We're not going to worry about what happened in 2018. The guys that are in the locker room with me right now are the guys that I'm going to battle with. That's what it sounds like. He understands what those players are in that locker room. Much like you said, the other guys that are there, they're with him. They wanted to hear that. They wanted to hear Mike Tomlin say the things that he said. They also understood that A.B. needed his money and Pittsburgh wasn't going to give it to him. So the best thing for him to do was go to Oakland and get it. The same with Le'Veon. Le'Veon wanted his money. He was franchised twice. They knew. At the end of the day, these guys want to do something different. It's time for us to move forward. Now, it didn't work out the way they wanted to. They missed the playoffs, but they're going to be back in the playoffs this year.
Yeah, I wouldn't sleep on Pittsburgh. And you talk about the replacement business. It is. So in this case, in terms of the receiver position, that means Juju Smith-Schuster. What would be your expectations, Keith, for him?
Well, it all falls on the offensive coordinator and quarterback for me. I think Juju's a talent. He can catch the football. He can beat one-on-one coverage. But they got to put him in the spots to be successful because AB's not over there anymore. They don't have that guy, that alpha dog opposite of him to lift the coverages. He's going to now get the number one DB, the number one nickel guy when they move him inside in the slot. Guys are going to follow him all over the field. He's going to see some cover two bracket. He's got to know how to beat those sort of things. But as far as being a man child, I'm not worried about that at all. The offensive coordinator and the quarterback has to make the decision to get him the football and put him in the right spots.
Pittsburgh historically has done a great job of coaching up their number twos and their number threes to be able to step up and play within the structure of the offense well enough so guys like this can eventually flourish. Look, Antonio Brown didn't come into the league as a true alpha dog, number one wideout who could just whip people. He learned it. Obviously, a lot of it was on him because of his own intestinal, you know, fortitude and his own drive. But they've been coached very well there. James Washington, it's your time to step up. Deontay Johnson, it's your time to step up. They drafted you for a reason. They've identified great players at this position over the course of their history. It should not be any different now.
Longtime receiver coach Richard Mann retired, though. That was there to coach me, coach AB, coach a bunch of great receivers in the league. That might be a problem now that you mention that. That could be hard on him.
Right. And you mentioned Washington. He's just as crucial to me as Juju because they draft and they develop receivers outside of the first round. They're great at picking them up. But Washington started slow last year, showed signs of life late. But they need him to take some pressure off Juju, and they expect that.
Which really puts the onus on number seven.
Yeah.
Big Ben's got to have the best year he's ever had this year. And that's not a bad thing. I mean, that's what they pay you for.
He's got young
want, right?
He's got the blood for that.
Exactly.
He's got young receivers. He don't have that veteran barking at him anymore, so he's in control.
That's right, which is exactly
I think how
what,
he likes it.
He's in control.
That's right.
Fair enough. All right, while we're talking receivers, certainly Odell Beckham falls into that category, and you asked Mike Tomlin about OBJ.
Like, for instance, Odell Beckham twice a week or twice a year, you're going to have to figure out what to do with him, right?
You know, I see great players or we see great players week in and week out. We've seen him before. We got respect for his talent and the talents of everyone that they've acquired. But, you know, it doesn't change our agenda or our focus.
Yeah. Was it that Rex Ryan, I'm not going to kiss the rings? You know, that's sort of that ilk, if you will. I mean, look, there's been a splashy offseason in Cleveland. We talked about it just, half an hour ago. But clearly he's going to put the blinders on and focus on his team. Jeremy?
Oh, yeah, that was my favorite part of the interview right there. I mean, he caught me off guard even doing that, but he set a tone that, hey, I'm not going to praise a guy in July. So every game week, Tomlin holds his press conference, and he speaks for about 10 to 12 minutes at length in detail about the opposing team, every position, every player, every strength. But he knows coming November 14th when the Browns play the Steelers, that's when he can let everybody know how good Odell Beckham is. He does not need to do that now.
You know, I wouldn't make too much of it. I think he understands that Cleveland has put a good roster together. They've acquired some players, but at the same time, he's got to take care of his business in Pittsburgh. So you can't sit around and worry about one guy. Odell's not going to change the face of the National Football League nor that division. It's the Pittsburgh Steelers, and he knows it.
I think you can speak to this, Lewis. All of you, actually, you know Mike Tomlin well. You know, there's some smoke a little bit, and there's some conjecture in that, but this is who he is. Yeah. I mean, I really believe that the person he presents, for the most part, he's not going to be as candid with us as he might be behind closed doors, but he's a pretty focused, task-minded guy.
I think you're seeing why Mike Tomlin surprised the NFL world by when he got this job in the first place. he's showing you why the Rooneys were probably sitting there going, what do we have here? This is not, I mean, and that's not a bad thing. That is a good thing. And he has been like that from day one that he's talked in front of the media till now. And he's not going to change, nor should he. He has been very ultra successful. He's got a good football team that has really fortified a lot of things, especially on the defensive side of the ball. He's got the defensive rookie of the year in Devin Bush. I just love these predictions. So, I mean, he's got a lot of things going for him.
You have named the entirety of the award season.
Pretty much.
I'm telling you, it's Tony Dungy, scary-like. I'm just telling you.
Yeah. You know, I remember I was in Pittsburgh the day he was introduced as the head coach, and the tone in that press room, if you will, from when we started, when everyone thought that's not who they wanted, it wasn't the sexy hire.
Sure.
To when 15 minutes later, I swear to you, it was like
Mike is masterful with the English language.
All right. I'd love to watch him read the phone book.
I spoke with linebacker Anthony Ciccola recently. He told me there's only one team in the NFL that wouldn't want Mike Tomlin as their head coach above all else, and that's the New England.
I was about to say, got to be New England.
He relates to his players.
On Monday, the 49ers announced a new deal for Robbie Gould, a four-year deal. They beat the deadline. 4 o'clock Eastern on Monday was the final time teams could negotiate extensions with players who had been franchised. So Robbie Gould stays put, a four-year deal with the 49ers.
One day you think you're a free agent. The next thing you're getting franchise tagged, and then you don't know if you're going to be back there. You get to the deadline, and, you know, nothing really happened until late last night and this morning. And, you know, it's just kind of a roller coaster of emotions. Where are you going to be? Where are you going to go? You know, I think it was a lot to do with when you're in contention for the playoffs or you're hovering around maybe what you think would be the playoff record. You want a guy down the stretch that's going to make kicks.
And then the well-traveled Golden Tate, now a New York Giant, his third team in the last year. Tate began his career playing with Russell Wilson in Seattle, and then he moved on to Matthew Stafford in Detroit, and he was asked, who's the best quarterback he's had the opportunity to play with?
Stafford's been the best quarterback I've played with. The guy can flat out play. He's tough, and his attitude's amazing, and he just wants to play ball. I have nothing but praises for him. I think it's almost unfair that he's such a good player and doesn't have, you know, playoffs or a ring to show for it. And that's, you know, that kind of hurts my heart that I wasn't able to, you know, help change that. But I think over his career, if you put him in another organization, maybe things are different. I don't know, because I played with some guys over my years that I've won playoff games with that I don't think are as good.
We're going to crack it open. It sounds good, sounds bad. Let's start with Golden Tate. We heard him last. He was asked a question. Look, he answered it. He said it was Matthew Stafford. We know he played with Russell Wilson, won a Super Bowl with Russell Wilson. Sounds good, sounds bad to you.
I'm going to go with sounds good, and it depends on who, which
your
vantage point you're looking at this for, right? So what I appreciate here is the candor and confidence he showed in Matthew Stafford. I think that Matthew Stafford has perhaps been a bit underrated. He's been paid incredibly well, and I understand that ultimately wins and losses often define the legacy of a quarterback. But Matthew Stafford has got exceptional toughness. He can make so many incredible throws from a variety of angles that other quarterbacks are not capable of. Has he been inconsistent at times? Yes. Have they not won enough games? Yes. But I respect the fact that Golden Tate has such reverence and that's something that has not changed despite the fact that he has left the Detroit Lions or did at the middle of last season.
You and me?
Yeah, no, you go first.
I would say it's a little bad.
Really? You just asked the question.
Yeah, but you could just say the quarterback that you won the Super Bowl with in Seattle, the one that essentially got you the football when you were young and helped you parlay that into money from Detroit. I understand there's some underlying things that have gone on there in the past in Seattle with Golden Tate and the rumor mill and all of those sort of things. So he could be kind of poking the bear a little bit by saying Russell Wilson is not the guy that's Matthew Stafford, who hasn't, I believe, even won a playoff game. Okay, so you just can't do that. Come on, Phil. You can't do that.
It was a local Michigan station.
It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter if it was their team. It doesn't matter if it was their team internet guy. It doesn't matter.
He could have said Daniel Jones or Eli Manning.
Internet guy.
It doesn't matter. Whoever handles their social media.
Yeah,
he still went out on a limb, Luke, you know, and did that.
You're right. And you know what? Look, players. players always have, you know, a lot of times when you ask players these kinds of questions, personal feelings come into it. Personal biases against certain players come into it. And a lot of times it's not really an organic answer.
Yes.
Well,
really,
but it's his
okay,
organic
but,
answer.
But
is it okay, really?
Is it really?
Does he really believe that?
But, I don't know.
Look, I will say this. Look,
in
defense of Matthew Stafford, I will say this. Look, it's criminal what the Lions organization did to him as far as support for many, many years in the form of a running game in particular.
Yeah.
And it's only until recently, until the offensive line really has been heavily invested in. They found the running back of the future in Kerryon Johnson now. So maybe things are looking on the up and up as far as him being a winner. But as far as Russell Wilson and what he has done and statistics that back it up and the fact that he's won Super Bowls, it does reek a little bit of personal bias.
Yeah, it's a personal deal.
It does.
Let's keep it 100, Wendy.
No, I'm fine with personal bias as long as it falls in my favor. It's when it doesn't that I have
most people are.
Last offseason, two other marquee receivers were traded. Antonio Brown, now a Raider. Brown will go for a 7th straight 100-catch season with Derek Carr as his quarterback. And then OBJ, of course, is in Cleveland just a year after signing an extension with the Giants. He now headlines a deep group of weapons for Baker Mayfield. No, they didn't sign him to trade him. Just ask him.
Sure about that?
Our own Keyshawn involved in one of these big deals. Back in April of 2000, the Jets traded Key to the Bucks for a pair of first-round picks. Soon after that, Tampa Bay made Keyshawn the league's highest-paid wide receiver with an 8-year, $56 million contract extension.
Is that real money?
For you.
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah, I saw it all.
We are not going to cry for you if it was tough, but what was the experience like?
You know, I didn't want to leave New York, obviously, but I wanted to make sure that I solidified some wealth, and I was able to do that. And I wound up going there. I had a great experience. We went on and won a Super Bowl, but it was tough. That first year, especially with Sean King at quarterback, we had to get some continuity. I had a new offensive coordinator. So it took a minute to kind of get on board. So it's going to be tough for guys that are moving.
It doesn't happen instantaneously.
No.
Even with, say, Baker and OBJ. I mean, it takes a minute, and you know it well more than we do. Plenty of wideouts, by the way, changed teams this offseason beyond the ones we mentioned. Golden Tate and Tyrell Williams signed big contracts with the Giants and Raiders, respectively. And then vets like DeSean Jackson, Devin Funchess, and Demaryius Thomas could also play roles on potentially contending teams. So, Key, you've lived it. You've been there, done that. Let's look at who may be the most impactful for their new teams in terms of these wide receivers who changed addresses.
You know, at the 5 spot, I like Devin Funchess coming over from Carolina. What he does is he gives Andrew Luck that big, giant body in the red zone to pair with T.Y. Hilton to give him something to do there. I thought that he was going to be that guy for Cam Newton in Carolina in the red zone. It didn't quite work out the way that we all envisioned when he was drafted, but yet and still, he lands with a pretty doggone good quarterback in Andrew Luck. So he should have a promising second wave with the Indianapolis Colts.
All right, number 4.
But number 4 for me is a guy revisiting the same team that he was once at in the Philadelphia Eagles, and that would be DeSean Jackson. Speed demon. He will not lose any speed. He's still the same guy that was in Philadelphia. I think leaving the Tampa Bay Buccaneers and going back home and getting with Carson Wentz and getting with this offense, he adds a veteran presence. He knows how to play the football game. And look, quite frankly, he wants to prove that he should have never been out of Philadelphia in the first place.
Which he shouldn't have.
No, he should not. But I don't think you can underscore that point enough. We talked about chips.
Yeah.
That's a potentially useful one for him.
You know what's interesting about him, though? I don't think DeSean doesn't return to Philadelphia angry.
No.
He returns to Philadelphia almost like celebrating.
Yes.
Like,
you know, wanting to be moved up.
Absolutely.
And you know
because what? They didn't want him to leave.
Despite the fact that he is a home run hitter, DeSean is one of the prettiest route runners you will see. Tremendous body control. And for a guy who's sub 6 foot tall, has a stride of like Usain Bolt. He can eat up ground so fast. Be at the link, home opener for the Philadelphia Eagles when they announce that kid's name. It's going to be insane.
Yes, it will be. Number 3 is Crowder going to the Jets coming from the Redskins. And this is interesting because Le'Veon Bell is over there, Phil.
Yep.
Now you got this inside slot guy to give the quarterback and Sam Darnold some nice targets. He understands route running, and he's tough as nails. Now, a lot of people will say, well, why? because he's a slot receiver, and that's something the Jets desperately need. They need an outside guy to step up too, but an inside guy that can pick him up and put him down like Crowder gives that extra step for.
There was some reporting key after Le'Veon Bell and also C.J. Mosley were signed to the effect that Adam Gase was not particularly comfortable with them being signed for the amount that they were signed at.
Yes.
He didn't exactly deny that. One player that the opposite is true is Jamison Crowder.
Yeah.
This was the guy that he targeted in free agency to be a massive addition to his offense and specifically to help make Sam Darnold better right away.
And why is that? Because he operates between the numbers.
Yes.
And it's free.
All the room in the world.
It's like free real estate in between the numbers now in the NFL.
Yep.
You can't, we run that big hits highlight. You can't hit like that all the time.
No.
In the NFL, most of the time it's a flag. He should tear it up there.
I wonder who
number two.
I'm going to take my man, Odell,
and make him
number two because he's getting over there with Landry. He's with Baker Mayfield. When you're looking at it, when they get Kareem Hunt back, that offensive side of the ball for them could be dangerous if Coach Freddie Kitchens knows how to call plays as a head coach and not just as an interim offensive coordinator. And OBJ is OBJ. He's going to be good wherever he goes. But I think from a veteran wide receiver standpoint, he gives the Cleveland Browns something that they did not have.
All right, I think it's a pretty sturdy limb I can go out on here then to say that Antonio Brown in Oakland with Derek Carr is your guy?
No.
Okay.
Adam Humphries. I would say, and here's why AB is number one for me as a veteran receiver going over to Oakland from Pittsburgh.
Yep.
John Gruden has something to prove.
Sure does.
Not only to Oakland, but also to the Pittsburgh Steelers. And he wants Antonio Brown to make sure that he gets off. He wants to do that. He's calling the plays. He wants that guy that he paid all that money for to show the world, look at me.
Yes.
I know how to call plays.
He's referring to my favorite word, Wendy. Sponsorship.
Sponsorship.
Yes. He's got a lot of sponsorship right there. And you know what? Antonio Brown, all the things you may not like about him, everyone loves his work ethic. The guy is an absolute work dog. I mean, he works. And this guy didn't show up in the offseason. And the head coach started getting a little frustrated.
But he never showed up in the offseason.
True. But what I'm saying, when you're talking about sponsorship, John ain't going to let him fail.
No, he's not going to let him fail. Yeah.
For John Gruden to get this right, this is personal.
Absolutely.
It's personal. This is a personal situation.
And when you've got that guy who's calling the plays who needs that guy to be successful more than anything else.
It's going to be Target City out there.
No, it is. Oh, my God, yes.
All right, there were four players who received 99 overall ratings. Aaron Donald, Khalil Mack have combined to win the last three Defensive Player of the Year awards. That seems warranted. Seahawks linebacker Bobby Wagner has made first-team All-Pro in four of the last five seasons. And DeAndre Hopkins, the only offensive player to earn that perfect rating. Do we have any issues, gentlemen, with the 99?
Well, I want to know, is Bobby Wagner bringing his 99 Madden rating to the negotiating table? As we know right now, he's looking for a new contract with the Seahawks. Like, is he going to use that as a leverage point?
I don't know.
But these four merit it. They clearly the two best pass rushers.
Well,
in the
you know what? I would ask this. Okay, as far as like when you look at wide receivers, look, I like DeAndre Hopkins. I do. Nothing wrong. What's Antonio Brown's weakness compared to? Why isn't he a 99?
A Hop or Michael Thomas or OBJ? Like all
Julio?
Those guys, Julio, yeah. All those guys.
Yeah,
if you put them on a board right now, who's going first?
Yeah,
That's how I look at it. And that's fine.
And I like DeAndre. I just don't know if he's going first.
That's right.
I think, tongue in cheek a little bit there, but do players, is this any kind of real motivation, you think?
I don't necessarily know that it's motivation. It's certainly something that bothers players.
You're talking about the cream of the crop of athletes in the world. So when they kind of look at each other, they're like, wait a minute.
He's a what and I'm a what?
Exactly. I mean, all these guys have some very, you know.
Especially receivers. You know how we are.
Yes, we do.
Oh, yeah.
No.
Yes, we do. All right, speaking of that, in that vein, not everybody was thrilled. So listen to Keenan Allen.
Did you say vein?
I did.
And I just want to start this video off by saying I will not be playing Madden 20, period. All right, number one, my overall is at 89. For sure. My short route running is a 91. 60. My medium route running is an 88. What? Like, my deep route running is a 75. Like, bro, who's making this shit, dog? What? Who did this? Speed's at 87. Like, bro, ain't nobody just running with me step for step like that, bro. Like, come on, dog. It's not that sweet out there, man. Like, what is you thinking? My strength is 69. Like, I'm a little boy. I'm just not understanding something. I'm not understanding. I'm an 89 on the game. Pro Bowl back to back. 1,000. I don't understand. What's up? Talk to me.
First of all, I like that. Never mind that never let him see his sweat thing. Just put it out there. You know, he's got
so good.
He broke it all the way down, though.
He said
my strength is a 69.
Short run is speed. Deep routes.
I don't know if it was, like, empirical data, but it was. He laid out his argument.
Yeah, 89 is a pretty reasonable overall grade on Madden, right? You know, like, that's a pretty reasonable rating.
I don't know.
I mean, listen, it's not the best wide receiver, and I'm sure there are probably 12 wide receivers that think they're the best wide receiver in the NFL.
Yeah, but
honestly, the crazy thing,
and both of y'all have punched me for this. The scouting department, though, sometimes, like scouts and stuff, they, like he said, running step for step. Like, okay, no one is running away from anybody that's not Tyreek Hill.
No, it's
everybody
true.
Else, we're side by side.
No.
I mean, that's just the way it is in the National Football League. But you hear, unless you're Randy Moss. Other than that,
Oh, wait.
Nobody's running away from people.